In 1599, the Catholic Church in Rome did famously burn a Dominican friar in Rome on the stake for heresy. And this fact is known and is taken up as a sort of little fact, and a whole lot of things are strung together with Galileo and the scientific revolution. It's sort of a context to say that once we believe that the Earth was the center of the universe, but then with Copernicus we had a new sun, the center of the universe viewpoint, and this person was burnt at the stake. So that was the popular take on things, and it's a good sort of background to make it a very real fear that, say, that Galileo, who's up against the church about 10 years after that in 1610, again, up against the Inquisition and various sort of intellectual aspects, or the intellectual police of the church at the time, that he could have suffered the same fate unless he recanted. And it's very convenient, and this is, I suppose, the problem of convenience history. That is, where you take an element of history, you want your story to make it smooth. And indeed, if you do tell a simple story, people get less confused, you know, more marks flow, and everyone's happy. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Now I'm coming up back from cardiac rehab, if you've heard lots of times before. And Bruno is someone who I studied just privately before my cardiac stuff. I wasn't really expecting to be around at this point in time, so let's have a celebration that I'm up and kicking at this point in time. So Bruno fascinated me, just the richness of the history and the complexity of the history, and I think I wrote very much down a paper at one stage inspired by Bruno. But not on what you would think about the heresy, the story, but by the sort of the evolution of how they tracked down Bruno initially, and the importance of footnotes and notes. And so Bruno actually intersects with education on several points. The real history of Bruno intersects on many points. So Bruno is an interesting character, and let's talk a little bit more about him. So often I will turn open a page of a textbook and it will have a picture of Bruno, and they say burnt on the stake by the church for proposing the heliocentric Copernicus story. And let's move on. And of course, it's like, I suppose, chickens or anything. Why I say chickens, it's your imprinting. So really, the very first piece of information you hear and it gets to you first is that it's imprinted. And then people are very cautious if you say, look, things didn't happen that way. And then you do a more reading. Recently I decided to look, I'll just check on a game, and the detail of facts that I found out in my detailed research reading a piece of people's theses on it and contacting experts on him, they've disappeared. But there's some new interesting facts. But the most important thing is that the fundamental idea that the church would burn someone at the stake for a heliocentric rather than a geocentric, that is, the sun-centered, the Earth revolving around the sun rather than the sun revolving around the Earth, point of view, is unlikely, because the church had no official church view on either model. So they were, if you like to say, agnostic about either those models. In fact, when you look into it, the church scientists were quite sophisticated, and as close as we had for reviews, these people who are not experts but ask for internal consistencies of answers. And so I think in 1940, 41, or some time like that, actually unearthed various Vatican documents pertaining to Galileo's trials and interpretation of those trials, and also Bruno's trials. They actually got out the charge the charge sheet. And the charge sheet said his views on whether the Virgin Mary was in fact a virgin, some of the classic heresy things, various aspects to God and the structure of the church, sort of things that you would get concerned about if you had one of your representatives of the church putting these ideas forward. But it's not necessarily that they would burn you for that. And one of the theories that he have was the Bruno many worlds theories, that the dots in the sky, which were stars, were in actual fact suns. And this was something, obviously, something that we only figured out after a long, long time. He had this view that they were in fact suns, and around those suns orbited worlds, and there were many, many different worlds. Obviously, this makes a rather complex point theologically, because of whether the universe is actually infinite. The stars are on a starry sphere. They're actually pinpricks rather than actual physical balls, as we believe them now. And where there are many universes. Now, Bruno himself didn't come up with this idea, or the idea didn't come out of thin air. In fact, there was a Greek school of thought that there were indeed many different alternative civilizations and worlds, so to speak, besides our own. And alas, I can't find, I suppose I could unearth one of the papers that I wrote and to get back the detail on. Bear in mind, this is rather an esoteric paper I wrote about footnotes. And you say, how does footnotes go into it? So Bruno came up with the idea of many worlds, and then Carl Sagan noted that this particular, in one of his programs, this person came up with the idea of many worlds. And I think Carl Sagan died before we discovered the first exoplanet. Then we discovered one, and then we discovered hundreds. And then we've discovered that on average, there's, I think, 1.2 planets per star in the sky. So if there's 200 billion or even a trillion stars in our galaxy, there's even more planets. And now planets which exist in the Goldilocks zone and replica Earths and replica solar systems that we're discovering here. We're discovering not one planet, but up to 9 planets in a very similar orbital patterns to our own. So the Bruno speculation, because he didn't know anything more, it was basically following up a line of ancient speculation he grabbed onto him. So let's go into the story of Bruno. He was, this is just going off memory, he was born in Naples, which was another kingdom as opposed from the Papal States. So it's hard to understand that. I think Naples was a Norman colony, that is the Normans which invaded England, and obviously in Normandy, also had a colony in Italy. And if you go to Naples, you'll see a Norman castle just sitting there, completely out of place with all the Baroque and Renaissance stuff. You have a medieval castle, a really large medieval castle there. So the Kingdom of Naples was separate from the papal states, and he became a Dominican friar. So this is wearing a habit and all this type of stuff, and began to be an academic. And where I picked up the story was where he's going through various cities, and I think the Inquisition stopped him on the road and actually went through his books. And for me, this is a very interesting thing, that a few hundred years earlier, no one would go around with books. Books were, you know, that were beginning to be printed, and people were holding whole numbers of books. And this is also interesting for me in terms of, bear in mind that I'm not, I suppose, planning around on being around all that more. So I was just, let's just go for it and get as much information as possible. Found out that the Inquisition was not a single function. The Inquisition was the name the name for a particular state that different states or the church went into, where they would appoint people to actually inquire. They're basically like ICAS, an inquiry mechanism. And so I think there's up to 12 identifiable different breeds of inquisition. So the most ferocious inquisition was by witch hunters, I think, and these are really rather frustrated individuals in remote parts of the church. And again, in the Inquisitions, the Spanish Inquisition, like we identify the Spanish Inquisition as separate. The Roman Inquisition was slightly different. The Pope's Inquisition was slightly different because there was a dubious power supply. Who would be power supply, power place, who would be in power? And they'd basically brief these people, and these people would go around. And usually they'll be called in, not by the church itself, but by locals concerned about the developments. And just to give you a clue, Bruno was, by the 1550s, the Roman Inquisition was, but this is the Church Vatican Inquisition, was really, had begun, stopped killing or torturing anyone. They would just inquire. And much more similar to, I suppose, police following with terrorist suspects at the moment. So there was obviously a time after September 11 where everything was fair game and people were going into prison, and you've got Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib and all that type of stuff. And that sort of wound down very much. And so by 1550, things had really wound down in the Roman version, the Vatican version of it, as things stabilised out. And in general, people would call the Inquisition in to investigate things. There was a famous, was it in Milan? I can't remember. It's sort of in my head. This is straight off the top of my head. I still, in my head, have this blinking point somewhere around the Venice area, some place in there. There was a Milla. So a Milla is not your church notable. It is something that you would ignore. However, the Inquisition was in town to listen to the word Bacchanalian myth. So even though the Catholic Church had been there for a time, Catholicism had been there for 600 years or more, there were still pagan sects and pagan beliefs, and there was a belief of witches at night going out in the night, full moons, and getting on brooms and having fights and evil demons around the place. That's sort of the, if you can imagine, the peasant remote rural parts of Italy were like this. And so the Inquisition would come out and listen to these people, and rather than burn them, they said, well, that's just incredible, we don't believe it, we don't subscribe to it, thank you very much. No, we're not going to burn anyone. So although people, the church going people said, oh look, you've got to really look at these people, they, the Inquisition just ignored it. But while they were in town, they brought out this this miller. This is a bread maker, flour grinder, and he had the cheese and worms version of the cosmos. And they listened to, you can imagine these people, these educated people listening to these people come up, and he had a belief that the cosmos space was cheese and that the angels and people were just worms inside the cheese. Let's not go there. It was obviously pretty batty. And they said, I think his wife, look, I really can't come up, I can remember reading this, and can imagine me reading this once, getting through, saying, oh look, you're not going to be around all that much, let's just enjoy and let's go as quickly as you can. But I think his wife actually was told to look after him and just shut him up. And he began, they stopped, he was good for a while, and then he began doing the cheese and worms cosmology. So if you want to look it up on the internet, you can possibly find the cheese and worm cosmology. And so I don't know, the church decided that this person would burn, And then I think they had probably second thoughts about burning people. And so this sort of ramped down. And by the time they came to burn Bruno was really antagonistic. And rather than just going with the flow, reading the political flow and getting on with life, he actually tied up the Vatican for years. And so they took him prisoner in 1593, and bear in mind that he was one of them, a branded outlet of knowledge, being a Dominican friar, and he was saying various things, I think about the transmutation, all these things which actually were originating from the Aristotelian view of knowledge, which they had sort of fused into the church to give it a five-star rational viewpoint. You know, like Aristotle was the top, and the church is the top. We want to mix the two together, so they mixed Aristotelian beliefs, which conflicted with a brand of belief, which were really earth-centered and didn't go with the brand of beliefs that Bruno had come along. Bruno stuck to his many worlds theory. There's no comment or any belief whatsoever to do with Galileo or any of Copernicus' story. And the church really was forced. He really forced the church to burn him. So there are many opportunities where he could have avoided it, and there's many times where the trials petered out, and that's all, folks. But then he would speak up again and ram home various thoughts. And so I'm not going to call it a suicide, but Bruno definitely had gotten in his mind that he wanted to be burnt. And that by burning him would cause more problems for the church down the track. So let's go up to Venice and stop him, read his books, and see comments that he's written in the margins of his books, and said, "How can you explain this?" And he did explain, and he went through the first level inquisition. It's a bit more scary inquisition, but again, it's logic. They're gathering evidence rather than torturing him. They're just looking for written evidence. And this goes to me. It's sort of the idea of a terror. Someone says something, and now you can say what they said, associate it with them, and then punish them. This is sort of the fundamental thing of mind control, societal control. Police state, if you like, or the church police state. But yeah, the intense thing for me was that at this stage, where you didn't have iPads and internet and notes, notebook on the side, that if you wanted to keep notes about something, you'd write notes down. And then Bruno somehow moved up to different cities in Italy, and then moved up with the King of France, and then moved up to England. And for me, it was amazing that this person, who had these sort of out left field views, would be have such a meteoric rise. And pretty much a bit later, there was a similar story of a it's from the the quantum astrologer. I've forgotten the actual name of the person. He was a famous doctor, and because he cured one person, he had a threat. There's singers and dancers have a threat. They can sing and they can dance and they can act. They've got triple threats. And so this person had a threat of being able to cure people. And what wasn't clear was what was the threat. That is his talent. That was the flavor of the month. And this is something I only realized or got recently. Bear in mind the other sources I can't get back to. I actually sent an email and chatted to someone who'd written a really good thesis on Bruno, an American chap. And by the time I wrote to him, he said, "Oh, look, I'd done that years ago, and he wasn't interested in the implications of all he'd done. But Bruno's threat was the ability to memorize things, and he had a memory technique, which I tend to use, is go through a group of things, a subject, note the key points, and from the key points, change the key points into letters and the letters into words. This is sort of like a computer technique where you actually get a body of knowledge halved down by connections and put the connections together, and so you have an unusual connection. So an example of that would be in explaining semiconductors, I have deck, pave, so D-E-K, sorry, D-E-C 5, P-A-V, instead of an E 3, and that will give you the donor electrons conduction band group 5, and positive holes, acceptor levels, the valence band, and group 3. You know, all those groups together, you have a way that you can remember it. So he had this secret trick he kept up his sleeve, and so he would have these feats of memory. And these people who wanted to learn, have study techniques, got them to come around the place. And so as he sort of... he was basically not meant for the Renaissance, which is... subtlety and being deference to power and who's going to pay your bills and all that sort of stuff. So he would upset people by arguing with them. I don't know how that happens, but he would argue with them, point out inconsistencies, and upset the resident academics. So the resident academics would form a relationship with the power kings, and they would have their academic belief aligned with the power king, so the their patron would pay the money, and they would produce work which was consistent with the patron continuing to pay money and continuing to have power. So you have a new person coming in who questions those people, they can very easily turn the patron against them. So he got kicked out of German cities, you know, just read for a couple of years, then he kicked out of other cities, and then he went up to, with his bunch of other interesting beliefs, some of his great from Greek theory. So he had no he wasn't a scientist in terms of having any incidental Scientologist, but he's more a science historian, a sort of like a commentator, like similar to me, who sort of reads back and tries to pick out the line. And so he went up to England. I think it was a King Henry at this stage. I can't. I think it was not Henry VIII, but an earlier Henry. And he went up to Cambridge, and which was the seat of learning there, and being a religious person. So there's also another religious world we can't quite understand. But he went up and argued and upset the it couldn't have been Oxford Dons, Cambridge, it could be Oxford or Cambridge, I think it's Cambridge, and upset them. And they said, look, I think it was Edward, King Edward, could have possibly been King Edward, I cannot quite remember around these things, but the Dons were turned against him. Now, it's not from what he said, it's probably the way he said it. And so he was holed up in London, and eventually had to, wasn't allowed on the streets of London, and was a like a Julian Assange, but this time in the French embassy. The important thing is that at that stage he stayed with a astronomer, John Diggs, and John Diggs was looking at the sky. There was a great supernova at that time, and of course a star suddenly blowing up indicates that they're not eternal, and they're out there in space, and that space is without end, as far as he was concerned. So it's sort of strange that there's certain things that he got right, but it's not got right due to scientific theory or analysis. It's just belief, and as with any scientist thing, that people who are rationalist theory, they tend to grab the first piece of evidence that came along. So with John Diggs questioned the starry sphere, which is all the stars are on a sphere, like a cloud layer. There's a star layer up there. And so John Diggs was an astronomer. Interesting that things all thread through. John Diggs was a friend of Shakespeare. John Diggs was interested in the Danish people, Tycho Brahe, at this point in time. So this is Tycho Brahe is pre-Galileo, pre-telescopes. The friendship of John Diggs is the source material that Shakespeare used to write about the Mad Danish King, which is really a story about Tycho Brahe and the planets. And if you read Hamlet, it's full of celestial comments and references which go pretty much back to describe a commentary about what was happening in Denmark at the time. So it's pretty mad times. So it's not clear whether our hero Bruno met Shakespeare, but he did meet people who met Shakespeare, and he went back again. And basically, he'd burnt all his friends, and essentially there was a situation where he was so caustic. This is Bruno. It's hard to know. He was so he couldn't keep his mouth shut and wouldn't think about the importance of saying things to people who, you know, saying things to people when they want to hear it or are able to hear it. So it's pretty unfair to say people aren't able to hear it. There are times in their life where they're not ready for new information, and they're not ready for various reasons or situations, and this is the flavour of these things happened to the modern day. Very much the education system here is following that sort of thing. That people are reasonable, but they need a certain conditions to hear new things, and there's this relationship between the local people who are providing services and have got a philosophical flavour, but they've got a patronage relationship, and it means that these people are very easy to upset and quite dangerous if you get on the wrong side of them. So it's interesting that in terms of education, Bruno is someone who had footnotes and the basic how you can structure or unpack information in footnotes and how that goes through as a way of extracting information. He had a memory technique, and he was living in a time where there was not the idea of a scientific experiment or a theory that, gosh, we have to send up rockets and make observations. So he's living as far as I can see, the lack of peer review, lack of institutions contain these people, these highly inventive social movers, but the institutions were there, but they weren't structured. There's a whole lot of things that weren't there, like I suppose telescopes, the idea of, oh, that's a theory. One of them might be right. Well, why don't we do an experiment about it and just sort of sit back and, as we do in Aussie, have a beer, have a barbecue and sort of just muse. Don't get too uptight. So eventually, and to a certain extent, I think on the scale of things, Vatican, if you actually read through, just reading through the Vatican notes on the trials of Galileo, it's a very interesting reading. They were putting some pretty valid points through it, and Galileo was putting some pretty weird and unscientific points, some sort of speculative jumping. These people, I don't know, the idea of having a trial of people and the ability to actually process things in the way that we would call rational, is they did a very good job, but within the time there. So there's a whole lot of things going on, which sort of a whole history, a whole movie, a whole sequence there, where Bruno gets burnt in 1599. I think there's a few other, you know, probably one other example of, generally there used to be excommunications, but there's probably one other example of one killing. It was really coming down, of course. It's really ramped up, the Inquisition ramped up in other places. But it's like you walk in and you just see that one scene, and you've read something about Galileo, and it's a bit, you know, one-sided, and you just, it's like walking into a movie, seeing one scene, and then having seen another movie by a particular Panamonics, Meyer Goldwyn Studios, MGM or something like that, but by a particular movie house, and that's it. And you're very busy. I think there's one of these things that I have encountered, that people are extremely busy and don't have the time to read through or contemplate stuff. Or I will encounter people who have read the same books but just haven't, the information hasn't glued to them, or they haven't said this is inconsistent with that. I suppose the interesting thing about Bruno, the thing that I was missing, is what was the driving force that let him go from city to city? What was a simple thing that the patrons, the non-philosophical, the punters picked up as saying, hey, he's someone, let him come in here, we'll fund him for a while? What's the celebrity point? So in terms of, like, he was a bit like a magic a bit of a magic show, and indeed that still happened many 500 years not 500 years later a few hundred years later with Dr. Mesmer. He had a show, and he was able to treat people with his magic magnetic wand, and then his magnet fell off, and he still treated people. So he was connected to the actual cosmos. So it's this style, the lone person self-promoting outside the scientific system is again what Bruno is all about. It's a bit of a meandering talk, but he's a bit of a meandering person to actually nail down. People really like, give me a dot point about this person, something I can take away. Well, this, unfortunately, Bruno is a many-dimensioned, you might call him a spectrum-y type person, someone who doesn't have social graces to pick up cues that he was insulting people, but he also existed outside a system which could identify him as spectrum and ameliorate some of the things he was doing. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains.